Today, we're going to start learning Daf Yomi for Masechet Erevin. So before we get started on the first Daf, we're going to have to do a little bit of background. Because when we look at the first Mishnah on Erevin, it starts off talking about Mavoi, Shigavor, Lamal, Mesrim, Amma, Yomei. The Mavoi, that's 20 Amma tall or more, you have to make it less. But we're starting kind of in the middle because we don't know what a mavoi is. We don't know what an eruv is, and we're already talking about fixing something technical about allowing us to carry in an area. So this also happened when we started the beginning of the Seder Shabbos, where we started talking about carrying from one rishus to another rishus without explaining that there's actually an isser of hotza. So before we get into the learning of the daf and of eruvin, we're going to start with a little bit of background. So, so as far as the mitzvah they're going to be dealt with in the Masechet Erevin, so we're going to start with there's actually two. One of them is the mitzvah of Tchumen. Another one is the Isser of Hotza. So there's a phrase that some people may have heard called that you don't have a Jewish community until you have a So they have a shul, a pool, and an eruv. So why you need to have a shul makes sense. Why you need to, because how are you going to have your basic Jewish life? And it's having a mikveh makes sense because you need that for Tarat HaMishpach. But eruv, like, where does that come in? Why do you need to have an eruv? So for that, we're going to have to explain a little bit more about what exactly hotza and tchumen is. So hotza, simply put, is that you're not allowed to carry from a private domain to public domain and vice versa. And as far as the iser of tchumen goes, that's that you can't walk more than 2,000 amot outside of your house. And if you live in a city, then it would be 2,000 amot outside of the city limits. So once we have these two iserim, so there's also midraban. There's a way to fix this. The eruv chatzerot is to help with the issue of hotza, and there's an eruv tchumen to help with the issue of tchum. So now, before we go into exactly how all of these work, let's explain a little bit more about what, from where and why there is the issue of hotza and the issue of tchum. So we begin with the issue of hotza. So the issue of hotza actually is mentioned in Masechet Shabbos, and there the Gemara is talking about in general about all of the various isurim that there were of all the various malachas you can't do on Shabbos, and it says that they're all learned keneged avodah haMishkan. They're all learned up based on the constructive actions that were done in the Mishkan. So the Sadragon and Rashi debate when it says keneged avodah haMishkan, does it refer to the work that was done in the construction of the Mishkan, or does it refer to the work that was done, the upkeep of the Mishkan, what we did on a day-to-day basis? So, and when the Gemara then continues and talks and keeps out to give examples of the things that were done in the, how they made the Mishkan, it mentions, when they used to transport from the wagons to the street and vice versa, and from one wagon to another wagon in the context of building the Mishkan. So therefore, we have the Rishut HaRabim, which is the road. We have the Rishut HaYachid, which is the wagon. And between the two of them, that's where we learn that you're not supposed to carry from one domain from a private domain to public domain, or vice versa, on Shabbos. So this would work very well. So is one of the ultimate lachot, and that's simply it. But the thing is, though, that's not where it ends. We also have the Gemara and Shabbos stuff, which says that, talking about Zrika, it says that actually where we learn this from. So it's actually learned from Vayetzav Moshe Vayivru Kol Machaneh, that Moshe was giving a commandment, and then the sound was transferred to the encampment where Bnei Yisrael were sitting. So then we have the Machaneh Levi, the Machaneh Yisrael, which is from one Rishut to another Rishut, by way of Rishut Ram in between. So that would be Israel Tzah, right to that. And in Gemara Pesachim, we have a different limud, where it says you learn it out from Ayetze Ishim Koma. So why would you need to have two limudim for Isser of Hotza? So the Re, quoted by Tosfot, Zachem says that you needed one is for the person inside and the person who's outside. It's basically two people carrying from Rishat Rab and one from Rishat Rab and the person receiving Rishat Yachid. And also because Hotza is a Melacha Grua, and therefore needed to have an explicit limud and source just for it. So what do we mean by the fact that Hotza is a Melacha Grua? Well, we call it Melacha Grua because you didn't really do anything. You moved an item from place A to place B, but the item is still the same as when you started. So, therefore, you know, it's a little hard to explain why it's Melacha, that's why it needs to win. But from Sar, you could have said, well, I mean, it makes sense why it's a Melacha, because, you know, nowadays it's big business to transport things from place to place. It felt that it wasn't sufficient of a Melacha, therefore it needs its own bus. Then how about Tchumen then? Because Tchumen would be even less. It's simply you're walking a little bit. Having going for a short for a walk of a couple of a kilometer or two constitute a problem. So that for as where is the source for Tchumen is, that of walking too far past where you're supposed to be. So for that, we have the Gemara in Sota where Bikiva says, how do you learn that you can't walk 2,000 amot outside the city? It says, let's learn based on the city limits of our Levim is 2,000 amot. So 1,000 is for the Migrash, which is for the nice fields around, and 2,000 is the outer city limits, and that's how we learn this outer city limits for Shabbos also, that you can't go past 2,000. But Rabbi Kiva doesn't really give a reason. It's simply a theoretical, more or less. And when we get to the Gemara and Shabbos stuff, says, I am a bet, then it's the question is, where exactly did we learn about Shabbos? Did we learn about Shabbos, everything about Shabbos tomorrow, or did we only learn about everything in Shabbos except for Tchumen? So why wouldn't we learn Tchumen there? Because Tchumen is actually taught explicitly in the Parsha of the month. As it says in Shemot HaZayim, Re'u ki Hashem atan lachem ha-Shabbat, al-kein hu noten lachem b'yom ha-shishi lechem yamayim, shu ish tachtav ayas ish m'kamo b'yom ha-shvi. So when Hashem gave Bnei Israel a commandment to collect the man. So initially it said, don't take too much, don't leave it over. So they followed the first command of not taking too much, but they left over, and then God got angry for that. And then God says, when it comes down for Shabbos, he says, cook double on Friday, and don't go out to collect anything on Shabbos. The people don't listen, and God gets angry. So the question is, so why and what and how this is at, when did this happen? So it would stand to reason that why is it usher to go anywhere when you're on Shabbos? Why can't you leave? So you could say, because God was trying to test Bnei Israel, and he was telling them, you know, you shouldn't be going out. And that's why I see, are you able to follow directions or not? Because this is the first mitzvah Bnei Israel got in Midbar, and, you know, they seem to have failed. But there's another option, is that maybe there's something actually more to the mitzvah, not simply that it was a test to see why we would do it. So the parsha of so the Rambam seems to have gone along the Katuv route, where he says in the mitzvah Lavin Shin Chaf Aleph that lo lalecha b'shabbat chutz l'tchum aval lo, right? He says, what's the problem? You shouldn't go outside of the tchum. But it doesn't really give much of a reason. So that's that. So it seems like he simply holds that it's a derech hatur. On the other hand, we have Sefer HaChinuch, who says, why shouldn't you go? Why shouldn't you go out of the tchum? So he says that just like God rested, you should rest, right? Vayanach b'yom ha-shvi'i. Therefore, in order for Al-Kain, l'zkor davar ha-ra'ui sh'lanu sh'nanuach b'makom echad, therefore, we also should rest in one place, just like God did, so should we. And we shouldn't go very far, only you should go a short distance, such as an enjoyable, a teul that's oneg, that's an oneg that's enjoyable. And once you're walking to Yud Bei Mil, which is the maximum distance listed for what Tchum Kuvita, right? So that's definitely way too much effort. That's rough, almost 12 kilometers, that's eight miles, that's too far, you can't consider that to be restful. So according to the Sefer HaChinuch, this Rav Tchumen comes out from the fact that we're all supposed to be resting in one place, and in order and or and it's supposed to be, and you have to be having owning Shabbos, and if you're simply walking too much, you can't have that. The Rosh Hashanah expounds in a similar area, but he also adds that not only is it a question of tercha, but he also says that that if you're spending all day walking, that'll be a problem because you won't have time to sit and properly enjoy on a Shabbos and be able to learn Torah. So, the Gemara in Yerushalmi gives when they're trying to expound on how far, so there you get a little bit different reasoning. There they say, the Rabbi Yoshaya says that it's unclear, I don't know really how far the Tzchum is midiraita. We got Rav Mano says that that 2,000 is a problem, but 4,000, he's not sure if you're in violation. And then we got Rabbi Shimon who says that I'm pretty sure that everything's fine until you get to 12 mil. That's where the problem comes up. So the question is, and what does he say? Why is it 12 mil like Machane Israel? Wait, so what does Machane Israel have to do with the limit of 12 mil? So actually it has a lot to do with it. Because when we're learning in the second Shabbos, when we're first talking about which of the Rishonim are, it talks about whether or not the desert is considered your starb or not. It says based on Mizman Shisrael Shrim and Midbar, that's when it was considered to be a your starb, but Mizman is that it's considered to be a Rishitachi. So wait, what's the difference between the two? Why does when the Mizman were in Midbar, the Midbar make a difference? We could say that, so I would suggest that there's something unique about what the Bnei Yisrael experienced when they were in the Midbar. And that's why God would tell them they shouldn't be leaving when they were in the Midbar. When Bnei Yisrael were in the Midbar, they had this special experience of God providing everything for Bnei Yisrael. Bnei Yisrael didn't need to search for food. It was provided them by God, by the manna. The water flowed right next to their tents, via Be'er Miriam. And as far as their clothes and their shoes, they grew with them and they never cracked or went bad. So when God is taking care of everything, so why is God putting all this effort? Because God wants you to experience what it is to be the Jewish people, to be the Jewish nation. And in order to do so, you can't be going around everywhere. You have to actually be staying in a place to truly enjoy the experience that is being part of the Jewish people. So we see hints to this elsewhere. So in the Gemara Beit Sava, it's talking about why it's forbidden to ride on a animal on Shabbos. So it says you should learn it out based on Tchum. But then because we know that Tchum is Aser, so Gzera on top of Tchum, and now it's Aser to this as well. But Gemara then says, well, that's a problem because Tchum isn't Tchum in Yerubanan. They say it's because of maybe they'll break off a branch. But that seems a little technical. Like, is really reason why you can't ride a horse because you might break off a branch to hit the horse to make it go faster? No, really, the Chazal wanted to usher horse riding, and then they simply had to find a good reason. So the Beit Yitzchak actually picks up on this, and he says that why is it forbidden to ride on horses? Not simply because, you might break off a branch. Rather, he says it's really the reason it's tied to what Tchumen is that Chazal basically didn't want people to be using public, to be using transportation on Shabbos. And he uses this to explain why you're not supposed to use a trolley car or bike on Shabbos, because he said that Chazal had already ushered riding a boat for other reasons. So, and now they're saying that you shouldn't be using these ancient, the equivalent of vehicles back, the horse was the car of 2,000 years ago, so you shouldn't be using that on Shabbos, different place to place. You should simply be where you are for Shabbos, and you shouldn't be going very far. So I'd like to build a little bit more on this and say that it's not only that, but it's also that once you start traveling at very, very long distances by use of a vehicle, changes the experience you have on Shabbos. So in the 20th century, there was a very big debate between the in North America, but also around the world, between the Orthodox and the conservative and reform movements about are you allowed to drive on Shabbos to get to shul. Orthodox said no, and the conservative and reform said yes. So leaving aside the questions of exactly why and why not, so let's talk about what happened afterwards. So as a result of being able to drive to shul, the conservative Jewish communities ended up spreading out farther and farther from shul because it used to be you had to live near the shoulder to get there on Shabbos. But once you could drive, the distance went from being, maximally, a couple miles, or once it gets past more than an hour walk, that's too far to get to shul. And now that you have a car, you could live 40 miles away and still be able to get there in a reasonable amount of time. So what ended up happening, actually, is that it ended up destroying the Jewish communities, because yes, you could make it to shul on Shabbos by driving your car. But that's not the only part that matters about having Shabbos in a Jewish community. Part of the experience of being in a Jewish community is experiencing Shabbos with the community, not just shul, but everything that's part of it. And once you are spending time traveling and you're not actually in the tchum, in the area of Shabbos, of that community, you're missing out on something. So yes, sometimes you're for the tchum and you might have a smaller area. Let's say if you're camping, you might have, just your campsite. But the fact of the matter is that when Shabbos comes, you're supposed to experience where you are. You're supposed to get the full experience of what it means to be in that place. And only by fully experiencing it, being in that place, can you properly enjoy Shabbos and properly know what it means to experience being part of the Jewish community. Okay, now just to give a quick summary. So there are two Isurim that are going to be dealt with in Erevin. There is the Isur of Otzah, which is from carrying from one area to another area, from a private domain to public domain, or vice versa. And there's also, which can be remedied by an Eruv Chatzerot. As far as how does the Eruv Chatzerot work, we will explain more about that when we get to Eruv Chatzerot. And we also have the Isur of Tchumen, of going more than 2,000 Amot outside of where you live. If you're in a city that's outside of city limits, and if you're camping out in the lower 2,000 from where you happen to be at that moment. And the reasons for tchumen, we said, were either gzir hakatuv, in order to allow you to properly have onik Shabbos, or to give you enough time to learn Torah. And lastly, the option is that the purpose of tchum is to make you stay in one location to experience what Shabbos is like in that location or in that community. So now we're going to head to the Gemara in Erevin, and start our general learning. So for the duration of the shir, I'm going to be using something called Perush Chai. I'll be sharing some of the photos. You can download for free on Hebrew Books. So if you'd like to follow along yourself and not just with some screen sharing, please feel free to open that up on your own. Okay, so the Mishnah begins. Mavoi shehu gavoa l'malo me'asrim yimayit. If you have a mavoi that's 20 amot tall, you should reduce it. So this is a little confusing. So let's read the first Rashi, and he'll explain a lot. So what does this mean? Shehinuhu etakora l'malo me'asrim amah. So let me share with everybody the photo of what a classic courtyard in Mavoi used to look like. So again, you can see your Perush Chai, on the first drawing, number one. So you see there's houses on the side, which lead into a courtyard or a chatzer, and the chatzer then leads into the Mavoi or an alleyway, and then that Mavoi would then lead out to the Rishon Rabbi. So what happens is that you'd put a korah on the edge of the Mavoi leading into the Rishon Rabbi, and now it's probably now that is too tall. So if it's above 20, you should put it, instead of putting it all the way up top there, you should put it down lower to where it is less than 20. Why are we putting this core up in the first place? So Rashi, I'm sure Rashi comes and explains. The purpose of the core is to allow you to carry within. So why? It's to be the right that it's the Hatzah or Shitrabim B'Shabbat. Right, so in general, we know that it's a problem to carry either four amot in a Rishat Rabim, which is a sracha, which is a highway, or a platja, which is a large plateau or a business square, or other levels listed in Rishat Rabim and Bet. And why? Because Shadon Digli Midbar, because they are similar to the way B'nai Israel camped in the Midbar. The whole meal of Shabbat, my Mishkan, Garmina, because we learn out everything from about the Surah Shabbat from the construction of the Mishkan. Agalot Shalavim, Barocha, Shishazar Amma, and when the Agalot were in of the Levim, they're unloading and loading, so there the passageway was 16 Amma wide. Garmin Bazar, because we mentioned in Shabbat, the Sadetat. Hilkach, Lahavir, Tarabin, Basir, me, so therefore you can't have a less than 16 amot wide, and it has to be straight on both ends. Aval mavoi katsaru, but in general an alleyway is too narrow. Ve'eno rachav, she's very amot, not 16 amot wide. Ve'ina mi'or rachavu ve'eno mufulash ela rosho echad patoch terabim rosho echad satum. Or that it's a close up alleyway, so either it's too narrow or it's could be wide enough, but there's something blocking the passage through on the other side. Because if it was actually truly mufulash and big, then they have to fix it a different way, as we'll get to in the Gemara later on. The cave on the law versus the rabbim who shared the talibe mina Torah. It's technically under the rabbim because it's not mufulash. It's not wide enough. So therefore, you really directly could have carried there, Why can't you? Rabbanan gazur aleh mishum da'ati lachluf ma'ibur hitarabim. So the problem is that an alleyway can look a lot like Rosh Hatarabim because people are going in, they're going out, and people could confuse the two. So therefore, midrabbanan, they said you can't. But how could you? B'shariyuha b'takada d'lechi akora d'lehave hekera d'lolei t'lemishra hitarabim gemur. And there, what can you do? Either you can put a lechi, or again, moving back up here, so we got the bed on top is for the korah, the aleph is where the lechis are. So as long as you do lechi or korah, that should be able to solve your problem, because that way you'll recognize that here's the level ends, and you won't confuse carrying in a mavoi with carrying in a shatarabim, and therefore you'll not come to accidentally violate and you still need to write that. Okay. Now we're heading back to the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer in Ratzarek that if it's 20 out, if it's more than 20 amot, that's fine. You don't need less than it. Barakah me'aser amot yema'et. But if it's more than 10 wide, you'll be yema'et. So and Rashi says what does it mean by yema'et? It means yidos kanim lema'et rochav kisata. Rather you'll stick poles in on the sides, and that way by way of lavud you'll be able to narrow down. Or even out of it, or to because of the width of the beads themselves, be able to make the entrance then for railway less than 10 amot, and that will solve the issue of being too wide. And then the mission continues. And then it says that the mission continues that if you have a tura petach, even if it's wider than 10 amot, you don't need to make it any less, because tura petach, once you see that there's a doorway there, that's sufficient recognition. And therefore you don't need, even if it's more than 10 amot, that'll work. So now moving on to the Gemara. Tanan Hatam. So we're there in Sukkah, the Gemara Sukkah, that Sukkah Shahi Gvom Lamala Masrim Amapsula, Bermuda Mapshir. So there's talking about the maximum height of a Sukkah. So Chachamim say that it's 20 amot is the maximum. And Rabbi Yehuda says that 20 amot or more is kasher. So my shna gabi sukkah the tani tefillah, but gabi mavoi tani tekanta. So why we have different languages between the two? Why are we calling a sukkah puzzle, but yet by a mavoi we're simply telling you how to fix it, right? Why is one puzzle and one need simply needs a small correction? Sukkah deraita tani tula mavoi derabanan tekani tekanta, because sukkah is deraita, therefore it says pasul. Whereas a mavoi tula derabanan, therefore it's just a tekanta. Ibai name or another answer, you could say deraita nami tani tekanta. Rather, if you deraita, you're going to say it's a tekanta. Ela sukkah denefishin mile pasink tani tula mavoi lo denefishin mile tani tekanta, because in order to fix a sukkah, there's a lot of complex details. There's a lot of different parts that would need to be the right height, and it would need to be adjusted. As opposed to for the for fixing the Mavoi, we're simply moving one beam is all you need to do, and that's not too complicated. Therefore, it says use the lashon of Takata. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Chachamim lo lamdua el mipetach shel pitzal shel hechal. Right. So where did the Chacham learn this out from? They learned it out from the entrance to the hechal. So Rav Yehuda lo lamda el mipetach shel ula. And Rabbi Yehuda only learned it out from the Pentecost of the law, right? So this is two different parts of the entrance way to the Beit HaMikdash. So the question is, which one did they learn from? So, okay. So as seen in the diagram from the Parish Chai, it gives you a looking from the side angle of looking towards what the entrance would look to getting into the Mikdash. So now we're going to go through explaining how this limud works out. So Dinan, so how do we know about how big the Hechal and the Ulam were? So we learned out in the Mishnah in Midot that Hechal shel Hechal gavo asri mama baruch lo asri mama, that the Hechal's entryway was 20 amot tall and 10 amot wide. Shel Ulam gavo arba'im mama baruch lo asri mama. On the other hand, the ulam is 40 amot tall and 20 amot wide. And both of them learned out that they should learn about the maximum size of a mavoi from the ulam or from the heichal based on the same pasuk, where it says in Vayikra, "Veshachtu petach om oed," you shall slaughter it by the entrance to om oed. Rabban sabrik yushat heichal lachud yushat ulam lachud. So the Rabbanan think that they are two separate kushot, whereas the v'chikti petach olmoed ahechal tiv. It says by what is the petach olmoed? The real entrance, what entryway to the mikdash is the heichal. The ulam is like that's the real entryway is heichal. Ulam isn't really the true entrance, just the pre-entrance. Rabbi Yehuda sabar heichal ulam dushachati. Rather, Rabbi Yehuda says they're going to be the same area, and therefore when v'chikti. Talking about both of them, and that's why this is talking about both, so therefore we go by the larger measurement, not by the smaller measurement. It's referring to both areas. Or you could say that maybe Rabbi Yehuda also says there are two separate areas in terms of Yusha. Right, so why does he learn it out? Because El Petach Ulam Abayit, because the pasuk says El Petach Ulam Abayit. So this is talking about Petach Ulam Abayit, so it's referring to the Ulam, and it uses the word Petach in there as well. Rabbanan, I have a katav El Petach Ulam. The Gemara either said towards the entrance to the Ulam, that would be the case. But what is the full position? Well, the position of it is. Is al petach ulam habayit, and what is the word habayit? Just that habayit hapatuach ulam means that it's the house that opens into the ulam haki, and then therefore that's referring to the hechal, not to the ulam. Haki kiv hai mishkan kiv, but we've got a problem here. Let's take it back. Isn't everything we're talking about, all the first pasuk we're trying to learn out, isn't that based on the Mishkan? So how are we comparing the Mishkan and the base of Migdash? Because there wasn't how are those two related? There wasn't an Hechal and an Ulam in the Mishkan, only on the base of Migdash. So Ashkechan, Mishkan, Dikri, Mikdash, or Mikdash, Dikri, Mishkan. Actually, we found these places where they're used interchangeably. So you're right. True, it's only referring to one, but because they're used interchangeably, we can compare the name from one to the other. If you don't say that, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Shlomim Shechatan, Kodam Tichat Platon, Tahechal, Psulim. Because the problem with a different statement of Rav Yehuda and the name of Shmuel, that if you had chefted a shlamim by the prior to opening the doors of the hechal, it's possible. Shenemar shechtu petach al moed bizman sheptuchid v'lo bizman shenulim. Because we learned that based on the same passage we were darshaning before, shechtu petach al moed, that the doors to the hechal have to be open, or any shechitot that are done inside are not kosher. But the Kupatsky's Darshaning is talking about the Mishkan. And there were no doors on the Mishkan. It was made up of curtains. There were no doors. Rather, we do find places where Mikdash is called a Mishkan. Mishkan Dikri Mikdash. Rather, there are places where these interchangeably, and that's why you can simply call one the other, and one Mikdash and the Mishkan and Mishkan the Mikdash without actually being a problem. You can learn and compare the denim of one to the other. So Mikdash Dikri Mishkan. So where do we see the Mikdash being called Mishkan? Yiftev Natati Mishkani B'Tokachem. God says that he's going to place his Mishkan amongst the Israel, but there he's not referring to the Mishkan. He's referring to in the future when Israel are going to build the base of Mikdash. So therefore, the Mikdash is referred to as the Mishkan. Well, the Mishkan Nikri Mikdash. When do we see the Mishkan referring to as a Mikdash? If you want to say it's based on that when the Bnei Kahat of the Levim were carrying it says Nosei Mikdash, carriers of the Mikdash. And then they would be able to set up the Mishkan before the Bnei Israel got there. So Ahu Ba'arong Tiv. No, we can't say that because when it said their Mikdash, it's not referring to them carrying the Beit Mikdash or anything else or the Mishkan. Rather, when they say Mikdash, they're referring to the Aron, which is the Kalim of the Beit of the Mishkan, or the Beit Mikdash. But it's definitely not referring to explicitly to the Mishkan or Mikdash or the Beit Mikdash itself. Rather, different pasuk. God told Ben Israel to make for me a mikdash, and I'll dwell amongst you. But immediately prior to that, Hashem commanded Ben Israel to build a mishkan. So there, we see the mishkan is being called the mikdash. Ben Rabbanan, Ben Rabbi Yehuda, Le'elchum Medach Shar Chatzer. Wait, so fine. So you're right. So that's how we can do it. But I'll say, but I've got a better question. Mara says, why don't the Rabbanan or Rabbi Yehuda learn out from the opening to the chatzer of the Mishkan, as it says, "Etziv orach chatzer me'abama v'rochel chamishim b'chamishim b'koma chamesh amot." So, when it's describing the dimensions of the Mishkan, it says it's a hundred by 50. So, and it's five amot tall. So, and it also it says, "Etziv." So we learn that each, so mal halon chamesh barucha v'esrim, avkan chamesh barucha v'esrim. Basically, we learn that since if there's a shoulder, i.e., there's a side here depicted in the parish eye, you can see there is a on each side is 15, and that leaves a gap of 20 in the middle, and they look like shoulders because one is on each side when you walk in by where your shoulders are. And so that would mean that part of the Mishkan is the remainder would be 20 amot wide and five amot tall. So just like there, it's 5 tall and 20 wide. Avkan chamesh berochav esrim. Avkan chamesh baruch is 5 tall baruch of esrim 20 wide. Petach shara chaser ikre petach some of the ikre petach. Right, so the petach of the chaser is clearly referred to as a petach, but anything else isn't really called a petach. Ibai dema, or you can say it learned differently. Kiktiv klaim chamesh esrei ama latev begova. Or you could say when it says that it's 50, that when it says the chatev is referring to being 15 high. But that would mean the rest of it around is 5. So basically, all circling around the Mishkan is 5, except for in the front, which is 15 tall. The Haki Chief Koma Chamesh Amot, and when it says that it's 5 Amot tall, what does that mean? So then, we look weird if part of the gate surrounding the Mishkan is what part's really tall, part's really short. So rather, we're going to reinterpret this. By the way, what do you mean to say about when it's 5 tall? It's really referring to the top of the Mizbeach HaNechoshet, which was 10 amot tall. Therefore, you get 15 all the way around, which works nice and cleanly, and it looks very nice. Rabbi Yehuda, So then, we go back to what we mentioned before, that Rabbi Yehuda learns it out from the entrance of the of the ulam. So that's fine. But how hatanan harachav measer amot yamaid. The law poleg Rabbi Yehuda. But Rabbi Yehuda on the Mishnah only argues about the being too tall. It doesn't argue about it being on the being wide. And if you really thought that it's learned out based on the ulam, it should be 40. You should have a height of 40 and a width of 20. And he should have said that just like you don't need to lessen for height, you don't need to lessen for the width of 10 either, because they're both still within the kosher range. So Amar Abaye Palig Bebraita. Rather, you see that Rabbi Yehuda argues in a bright. You learn the Mishnah argues elsewhere. The Tanya, Varaka Meser, Amot Yemaid. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Amot Sarichu Maid. So there he says, if it's 10 Amot wide, you should, the Chum say you should make it less. Rabbi Yehuda says you don't need to. The Leaf Log Medit, and so why didn't Rabbi Yehuda argue in the Mishnah? Palig Bekova, Huadin Larachba. Because you say, you talk about the height, and he assumes you'd apply the same thing to the width. Vakat Rabbi Yehuda, Mibit Loja Ulam Gamar. And we're still saying that Rabbi Yehuda learned that from the Petach Ulam. Hatanya. Didn't we say that if it's more than 20 amot, you should make it less? Rabbi Yehuda machshir ad arba'im v'chamishim. But this bride is saying that mavoi till 20 is to be less. And Rabbi Yehuda said if even 40 or 50 is good. Ten bar kapara ad me'ah, even 100. So now we've got a couple problematic shittas here. First, we have bar kapara. Bishmol bar kapara guzma. We understand bar kapara says 100 because he's simply saying that it's hyperbole. He's exaggerating. And that's why it's up to, it could be, he says 100 amot. El Rav Yehuda, my Guzma. What am I, we're talking about Rav Yehuda. What Guzma could it be said? Bishlam Rav Yehuda, Arba'im, Gorm Bichol Shula. So we can understand Rav Yehuda could be saying the 40, but how does Rav Yehuda also say the 50? El HaChamashim and Ale, where does he get that from? Amar Chista, Amat Nita Atita Rav. Rather, this bright that actually ended up making Rav make a mistake. Tanya, what's to that right? To Tanya, Mavoi Shuma Shu Gavo Mesri Mama Yoter Mipikol Shalechal Yemaei. If there is a entryway that is 20 amot more than the entryway of the Hechal, i.e., it's 40, you should make it less. Husav Amid Rabbanan Pikol Shalechal Gamri Rabbanan Pikol Shalom Gamar. And that's based on that other right, is where Rav thought that's Rabbi Yehuda Shita, is that 40 learned out from the Ula. Rather, where did Rabbi Yehuda learn from how to say 40 or 50? Because he learns it out based on the way that you built the entry-rated palaces. So entry-rated palaces are 40 or 50 wide, and that's what it should be here as well. So now we're going back to the question of if we're learning out from the entryway of the Heichal, according to the Rabban, then shouldn't we require doors? Alama, why? Tanan. That's not true. Like, why would that be the case? Didn't we learn in the Mishnah that Tanan Hefsher Mavoi Beshame Omri and Lechi Bekora? How do you fix a Mavoi? Beshame says you have to put up a side post and a Korah and a beam on the top. Vidhilo Omri Lechi Al Korah, one or the other, either a side post or a beam on top. Flatot Hecha. So then what do we do about like the Hechal had doors? Flatot Hechal is Niapa Alma Hu Daviden. Right. Rather, why are there walls on the Heichal for privacy. People don't see it, not because you're trying to actually mark at the end of where the Heichal is. It's just there, so people don't see it. So Elamanta. So if that's really the case, that's learned out according to the Chachamim from the Heichal, then how is Tzura Betach helping us ever? Because the Heichal Tzura Betach will have you. Lo, didn't the Heichal have a third of Petach? Didn't it have sides and have a top? Didn't it look like wasn't it an entryway? So even if that was the case, then 10 amot should be the maximum width of a third of Petach. But we said in the Mishnah that there's no limit to the width of a third of Petach. Alamot non imeishal third of Petach, alamot be sharacha meser amot in a sharacha mai. Mide hutaima. Ella la Rav ha matnile Rav Yehuda luchia barav kamei de Rav in a circle mayit. Rather, so how does he explain that you can't, that you shouldn't be? Amram relay tiniti circle mayit. You're right. Aniye circle mayit. I said you should. Ella matzah. Rather from here. Lo tihani le amatra. Rather, what is we really arguing about? We're actually arguing about a case of an amatra. So an amatra is a beam on the top of a, on, 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 as, a cornice on top of the entryway. And that's what they're arguing about. They're not arguing about the actual Tirapetas. They're arguing about something else, the Amaltra. Amaltra. Okay. And they're saying that Amaltra doesn't count towards the height. Even because it did not, as you learned that in the Mishnah, and we don't. Chamesh Amaltrot shall mile hayu al gabav zolmal mizum zolmal mizum. So there is five cornices on top of the entrance to the Heichal. V'hai mai tivda. This should be a refutation. Dilma ki tanya hi da maltrot ulam. Tanya v'hai mai kushya dilma tavnit haheichal katavnit ulam. So maybe, this would explain how this Bechokit works according to the Rabbanon. Because we know that there were cornices on top of that. But how about for Rabbi Yehuda, who's learning that from the Ulam? So we could say, well, maybe the Ulam also had them on top of it. Alma, Amar, Rabbi Elazar, Amarav, Rachba, Arba, Afalpish, and Abria. So it's talking about the how strong the core has to be, and Rav says it has to be four brothers up to be, it has to be strong. I feel like Voya Termastri Mama in a Tsarachlamay. And if it's even 120, you don't, and it's got an Amultura, you don't even need to lessen it at all. So Amar Rav, yes, and Amultura Matnita hi. But isn't the Amultura like that in a Mishnah or Brahita? Manktanila Amar Baeha, so rather, who is it? One is a bite name. Hakama braid rabba amr baruak tani la de have a maltra matita, particularly the rab. You shouldn't have said that and put the rabs. And what did Rab say? Amr harab. Now, anam alka matita. So there's a new right. The Mishnah, the two different tonight statements argue. Bilo kashana tade. Elamai ilakala mamar. Tanai. Some argument tanai. And that's okay. Lidi, nami tanai. Just like we'd look at tanaim. Regards to whether it should be 20 or 40, well, so machloka whether about amaltra as well. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak Amar below Rav Matnita Hadale Lo Kashan. Right, so if Yitzchak Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak says if you didn't have Rav's statement, we could have solved it differently. What we have said that Koratam Ma'ay Mishum Ekeira Hadatani Yeter Mit Petchol Shal Echal Siman Abama. Right, so what's the reason we for Hatha Korah? It's firstly for Heker. And once we say that it's if it's taller than the Pitkosha of the entrance of the Hekal, then simply it's a Siman Balma, and therefore it could work. Ramnagor Yisla Kanika is Lo Sirle Hadiraba. At least Sirle Hadiraba. Well, the story works well, that's David Rabba. But if you have the David Rabba, what do you say? So what does Rabba say? Damar Rabba, Kidiv, Lamani, Dudar, Dechem, Kibasa, Koto, Shafti. Right, why do you sit in Sukkot? So that everybody will remember that God let Bnei Israel, had Bnei Israel rest in tents when they were in the Midbar. So Adas Ma Adam Yadea Shadar Basuka. Lamal Mr. Mama any Adam Yadea Mishun Blozal Dubayan. Right, so it's in the Sukkot you have 20 Amot cap, because anything more than 20, people don't notice if something's more than 20 Amot above their heads. Alma gabe sukkah nami be kera pligi. So maybe he also says by sukkah, it's also a question of a care, just like by my voice for heker. Sukkah is also for heker. If we'll give a tarte lamali, what do you argue about both? Strika. Now you do all you need to say, you initially just have a statement about it being the problem being too high and both, and being because of heker, you need to have it mentioned both by sukkah and by every. Diashbina nami sukkah, bahakamar bihuda. Because you could have said if you didn't mention the 20 for both of them. It is said that for a sukkah where you sit down, people will tend to notice more the roof. About mavoi dehilos avid ema modul rabbanan. But on the other hand, for mavoi, you might say that heker is more of a deal, more of a big deal, because you might not notice because you're simply walking on through, so you might not look up. You might have said the verse also. About bahav ema modul rabbihuda. Because of the other way around, also, like maybe you'll notice more when you're walking than when you're sitting. And that's why you need them both. So my amaltara. So the question is, what's an amaltara? Rochama brei deraba barbua amar kine. So what does Rochama brei deraba say? It's something that looks like a bird's nest. That's what an amaltara was. Right, so Ravdimi, was a Tana, was an Amora traveled back and forth between Eretz Yisrael and Babylon. He said in Eretz Yisrael, they said that this is because what is a matra? We're made up of, we're sticks made up of cedar wood. Mandamar Paskid Arza Kosh Kini. Mandamar Kine about Piskid Arza Lo. So if it's made up of cedar wood, then even more so if it's simply made to look like a bird's nest. But if it's about the birds, then look like a bird nest, not necessarily for the sticks of cedar wood. Amanda Amar Paskid Arza, my time up. Right, so if the person who said, and if you say that it's that Paskid Arza is different, why is it the case? Mishum Dinafish Mashke. Right? Because basically people see cedar beams, it's very noticeable. They're very fancy. People notice them more. Baha Tsukka Dinafish Mashke. What about the sukkah itself? Shouldn't that also draw your eyes? Because there's the whole sukkah around you, like the walls as well as the whole roof. Kavirban on the low. And they say that it wouldn't do so. Rather, it's more because that's how important cedar wood is, that it's got more of a cult. People tend to know, the fancy cedar beams, cedar poles, whereas for sukkah, it's not so fancy. People wouldn't necessarily say that. Okay, and now we'll hopefully pick up next time from the two dots on Gimel Amud Aleph.